The scripture I'm reading from this morning is John 21, 1 through 19. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together was Simon Peter, Thomas called the Twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." They said to him, "We will go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know what it was, that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. That disciple, whom Jesus loved, said to Peter, "It is the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the lake. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, only about 100 yards off. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and they did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to them, "Yes, Lord." He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." And he said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." Picture with me, if you will, going to a county fair. Anybody here been to a county fair? Well, it looks like so. You'll know about what I'm talking about. You walk down the rows and rows of games of chance. Now, my mother would never let me play those games of chance. I went as a kid and as a teenager. It was a small county fair, Hocking County Fair, if anybody's ever heard of that. I lived in Hocking County when I was growing up. Most always, there is one game of chance that has floating toys, rubber ducks or frogs, something along that line. Any of you seen any of those? They're floating in a tank of water. The object of the game is different depending on the game. Like I said, I've never played those games, but I've watched others play it. Sometimes one tries to throw a ring at the duck as they float it around in this tank of water. Sometimes the object is to race to see whose duck wins. Now, I know at times, and I can't remember if it was here, if it was in Dayton, Ohio, somewhere, there was where they had a duck race, and they put them in the river, and you had a number duck to see whose would win. Well, now, just imagine 20 large containers of bathtub toys riding a cargo ship from China to Seattle. A violent storm strikes a ship. Well, back in 1992, this did happen. And these 20 containers with 29,000 rubber duckies, frogs, beavers, and turtles took one huge duck dive into the ocean. But don't feel too bad for these bathtub voyagers. They survived and embarked on an epic journey across three oceans and half the globe. These toys are so tough that they have stayed afloat for more than a decade. And during the assault of wind and wave, and probably spending several winters in the frozen Alaskan or Arctic floe. Through it all, they have endured, although constant exposure to the elements has caused their bright yellow skin to become bleached, white as bone. At this time, it was a 12-year odyssey that finally brought them to the East Coast, causing beachcombers to be on the lookout for squeaky toys on the shoreline. Well, anyone who found one of these refugees in North America earned $100 savings bond from the toy company that originally ordered the playthings from a Chinese factory. Now, these toys were still showing up as of July 2004. This is an old story. A faded plastic beaver was discovered after it was washed up on the Alaskan island. Oceanographers who studied the movement of debris and ice from the Pacific to the Atlantic are confident that the duckies left that region and were cruising down the East Coast with a breakaway fleet headed for Great Britain. Easter's over. Now what? That must have been how the disciples felt after resurrection, dumped in an ocean of confusion, floating about doing only what they know best, how to fish. Today's passage begins with Peter declaring he's going fishing. After all, things have to get back to normal after a crisis, and what better way to get back to normal than do what is familiar? Milking cows. Doubt if we have anybody here milking cows. Plowing ground. We may not have anybody here now plowing ground, although there might be some farmers in the congregation. Doing office work, teaching, or being engineers, going back to your engineering job. When we're in a crunch, we go back to what we know, where we're comfortable. Well, that's because in that place, we know where we are, where things make sense. They fish all night and catch nothing. Nothing. Now, Bob and I are fishermen. We didn't fish at all last year, which is amazing, because the year before we didn't catch much, so I wasn't too thrilled to go out to fish. But we've never really fished all night. Can't imagine quite fishing all night. We fished into the night, but not all night. They had been out fishing, and they caught nothing. Have experienced that. Then a stranger appears on the horizon and suggests that they cast their net to the other side of the boat. Even though they're experienced fishermen, they decide to take the stranger's advice, and what a catch they make. 153 fish in all. Never caught that many either. So many, in fact, that they can hardly haul them in. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved, most likely the disciple was John, tells Peter that it is the Lord. Well, Peter leaps out of the boat. The other disciples follow, towing the catch of fish. When they land, they see Jesus cooking some fish. He invites them to have some breakfast. This is the third time Jesus appears to the disciples after the resurrection. As a side note, ever wonder where Jesus has been or goes between those appearances? Not something I ever thought about before. Something to ponder. Anyway, the guys are all sitting around the breakfast table after breakfast, or rather the fire, like men sitting and gabbing at Bob Evans' restaurant on a Saturday morning. We have a tendency in our congregation, our men, they go on Monday and Saturday. They don't eat just once breakfast once a week. They eat twice. They go to Richard's and Monday, and then on Saturday they go to Big G's. So we have men gabbing around the breakfast table. Well, Jesus, these men, while they're gabbing, poses the question to Peter. Simon Peter, do you truly love me more than these? More than these what? More than the other disciples? more than Peter loves boats and fishing? Peter, we remember, denied Jesus three times when he was questioned after Jesus was arrested. Now, it's interesting that this conversation centers around this question, which Jesus asked three times. Do you love me more than these? When Jesus asked this question, he uses a Greek word which speaks of agape love or self-sacrificing love. Do you love me enough to sacrifice yourself for me? Let's each hear that question for ourselves. Do we truly love Jesus to sacrifice ourselves for him? Are we willing to trust the grace that he so lovely bestowed, so freely bestowed? Peter answers, "Yes, Lord, you know that I do. You know that I do love you." But his answer changes the word agape in the Greek to philios, which is less demanding love, like brotherly love or friendship love. But Peter doesn't respond with self-sacrificing love, agape. He uses philios. Then Jesus tenderly says, "Feed my lambs." Peter's been with Jesus as a disciple. He was in training, and now it's time to get further instruction. "Feed my lambs" is not just for Peter, but also for all of us who are disciples of Christ. Feed my lambs, the young babies, the most vulnerable among us. Jesus is calling Peter and us to help the helpless. Again, Jesus asks the question, "Simon Peter, do you love me?" Again, it is with the self-sacrificing love, agape. And again, Peter responds with, "Yes, I love you like a brother, like a friend. Tend my sheep. Give them spiritual food, nourishing food. Don't let them starve." That is Jesus' command to us also, to help others on their journey of faith. The third time Jesus asks, "Peter, do you love me?" Only Jesus uses the philios word for love, the brotherly friendship kind of love. Well, Peter must have been relieved and or hurt for a moment or two for Jesus to downgrade the love from agape to philios. Yet he realized that Jesus accepted him at his level of commitment. And Jesus accepts us at our level of commitment, where we are, till we are ready for agape love, till agape love is formed in us. We are like rubber duckies bobbing on the ocean, getting bleached by the sun, tossed and whipped by the waves of life, but accepted as we are. What Jesus has done with Peter is to lay out a job description for disciple wannabes, people who will be involved in the day-to-day work of caring for the people of God. It's not quite enough to merely perform duck dive into the waters of discipleship after having a mystical experience or a spiritual high at some service or a spiritual retreat or meeting like summer camp, Promise Keepers, Brethren Way, Emmaus Walk, or some other spiritual gathering. If you love Jesus, you've got to get dressed, wade ashore, roll up your sleeves, and dig into the work of discipleship. If you want to attend and feed the flock of God, you have to do that. Unfortunately, there are too many of us who are floating aimlessly on the sea of life like 29,000 Chinese rubber bath toys that drifted through the Bering Strait and bobbed past Iceland and aimlessly made their way down the east coast of the United States. They moved only in the direction that the current took them, like too many Christians today. Move only as ancient cultural winds and stuck in the mud thinking dictates. Paul says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds." By the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. And the will of God is something that is often hard for us to determine for ourselves. That's why we need the community in our discernment. We tend to get in the way of hearing God. What we want drowns out the voice of God. That's why prayer is so important. The will of God here, Jesus says, is that Peter and those who would love Jesus like Peter said he did must feed the lambs, tend the sheep, feed the sheep. It's sort of like the aphorism about location, location, location. What does a disciple do? Feed, tend, feed. Feed, tend, feed. That's a mission statement. Feed, tend, feed the flock of God. As D.L. Moody walked down a Chicago street one day, he saw a man leaning against the lamppost, and the evangelist gently put his hand on the man's shoulder, and he said, "Brother, are you a Christian?" The fellow raised his fists and said angrily, "Mind your own business." "I'm sorry if I've offended you," said Moody, "but to be very frank, that is my business." Moody rightly observed that this is the business of the church. The church has one primary motive, the proclamation of God's love, of God's forgiveness in feed, tend, feed, to embrace all God's people. We hear a lot about low commitment members or members expressing no time for things or activities of the church. Whether it's spoken or unspoken, our attendance says it all about where we are in commitment. We need to maintain a discipleship direction, unlike the bobbing ducks carried about by this wave and that. When Jesus asked those questions of Peter, he was really asking those of us all. In stating, feed, tend, feed, he is telling us, I did that. Now it's your turn. Easter's over. Now what? And this is the question Jesus gives us. Feed, tend, feed. He has taught his greenhorn disciples, took care of their needs, sent them out two by two, their field placement, because one learns by doing. Notice that at the end of the passage, Jesus says, follow me. Follow my example. Do as I have done. I did that. Now it's your turn. People are attracted to congregations that put faith into action and set out to make a difference in the world. There's a term called the butterfly effect, a term from meteorology that reflects the idea that a small change in initial conditions will become multiplied and amplified, rather, over time and create a large change in later conditions. That is, if a butterfly flaps its wings in South America, this can create a storm in Eastern Europe or Asia. Every tiny influence or motion has a far-reaching consequence. This is the lesson of the butterfly effect. Do you love me? Jesus asks us over and over. Yes, if we love Jesus, we need not to be discouraged. And we can trust the butterfly effect that our small efforts will be multiplied beyond measure. Jesus gave Peter responsibility, not for the entire kingdom, but just for the lambs under his care. And look what has happened these last 2,000 years since that breakfast on the beach. The butterfly effect has taken wing, and so it is with us. Do you love Jesus? Then visit the sick and the lonely. Teach the love of Jesus to those who are eager to learn. Go visit someone. Write a note or call. Sit with a dying person. Write a note or call, as I said. Invite those with whom you might consider an outsider to a worship service. When I was at Nettle Creek, it seemed like quite a few Sunday mornings, we had a motorcycle group that met in our cemetery that was right there next to the church. I challenged my folks to invite a motorcycle member to church. to worship. Cook, wash, and provide for those you love. We tend to ask, do I have to? If we are disciples, the answer is yes. Give your lives away in even the smallest ways, as taking a meal to someone just to be nice. We may never get the credit for all the tending and feeding that we do, but that is the way of loving Jesus. For surely God will gather up all the small things, the flapping of all the wings or butterflies, and the kingdom will come. Easter's over. Now what? Where are we today on our Christian journey? Floating like duckies wherever the current takes us, or steering ourselves in the direction of discipleship, including all of God's people in God's love, embracing those who cannot see the God spark in themselves. Brothers and sisters, it's time to roll up our sleeves, hit the beach, and feed some sheep.